Welcome to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato with my co-anchor, Mary Gamba. Hey, Mary, do you trust me?
I fully trust you. And as you were saying that, I said, this doesn't get old. I love this. I don't even know. We're on episode like 5,000. No, not literally, but we're in the hundreds. And it's just been so fun and a wild ride. So I trusted you many years ago when you said, okay, Mary, you'd be decent at this. And I look at myself and I don't hate it too much.
Oh, wow. That's a real high bar you have. And I also trust that one of the reasons we appreciate and enjoy producing, broadcasting, and sharing the lessons in leadership is because we have colleagues and good friends on, like Sabine Salvatore, who has been with us many times. Sabine is head of talent development and enterprise learning at our partners at Valley Bank. Good to see you, Sabine.
Good to see you, Steve. Thank you for having me again.
Well, always. You know, and Sabine, let's do this. We've been working with Sabine for many, many years, and we, for the last several years, have done something called the Valley Leadership Academy. Sabine has been the key leader within Valley to help make that happen with our firm, Stand and Deliver. But in the last year or so, we've pivoted, adapted, tweaked. How do we change it? Talk about the connection between trust in this relationship, but also trust and the kind of leadership we're coaching. It's a long-winded question. What the heck does trust have to do with teaching and coaching leaders at Valley? Please, Sabine.
Let me start with the Leadership Academy, if I may. We have built such a level of trust with you and Mary that you have allowed us over the last many years to rethink the academy, to rethink our curriculum. You made it okay for us to challenge the status quo, and that is completely built on the trust and the trusting relationship that we have. You have allowed us to take the curriculum and build it in a way that is most valuable to our leaders here at Valley. We have pivoted, we have changed, we have even changed on the spot, I would say. We start with a program, halfway through we may reconsider based on current events. And that only can happen when we have trust and we all have what is in the best interest of Valley and our core values here.
But to Sabine's point, Mary, that goes both ways. I would love to say we have the level of trust and the candor and the pivoting and, hey, listen, I know this is working, but what about if we tweak that? I'd love to say that we have that with every one of the corporations and organizations we coach and do leadership and communication coaching, and that's not the fact. So in the effort to avoid turning this into the Mutual Admiration Society, what is it about Sabine? Because in all candor, we don't trust some of the other colleagues we work with. There's not the same level of trust, let's just say that. What is it about Sabine and the trust level there that helps us be helpful to the Valley leadership? Mary?
It's all about the open communication. Sabine trusts, and it goes back to feedback, right? So Sabine was talking about change, and she was talking about trust when you're
Thanks
leading change.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. And so when you're talking about that change and you're talking about trust with that change, Sabine trusts that she can come to us and give us candid feedback. But it's also a two-way street. We proactively go to Sabine, as we do with all of our partners, to say, how can we do better? Are we providing everything that you and your team needs? What market changes? What may be new as we're leading into a new leadership academy? Give to us some information about the climate, how you're feeling. Right. And then most importantly, as we go along, as Sabine said, we don't keep the status quo. We constantly check the temperature and we are not rigid. We don't say, well, Sabine, for seminar three, we said we were going to do this and now you want us to switch. So it's about
who's the client?
Yeah, they are. And it is all about them. We talk about that all the time. And Sabine really just encapsulates that culture of it's all about them, but she's also open to giving us that feedback. And she trusts that we're going to receive it in a way that will apply it in a mutually beneficial way.
So Sabine, now I'm going to push you on the trust issue.
Yeah, sure.
It isn't just what we do in leading seminars at Valley. It's also what you do. A while back, you were prepping and then executed the facilitation and leading of a very important Valley. Was it a town hall?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
On the subject of trust, how much did you have to trust yourself that you were the right leader to be leading By the way, check previous interviews with Ira Robbins and also Yvonne who, and other leaders at Valley who we've had on Lessons in Leadership. Just check it out. Just put in Valley, it'll come up. You had a whole range of other executive leaders in that room. You're leading the conversation on trust. What did you have to trust about yourself, Sabine?
I think you know me very well. There was a lot of prep that went into the town hall and leading those conversations. I think I trusted at the end of the day that I've built goodwill with everyone that was in attendance. I've built those strong relationships. And I think I have role model the behaviors that we want to see in leaders. So I felt that I was in the right place to lead a conversation, whether on trust or otherwise. Character and competence are really a baseline expectations of our leaders in building trust. And I think I've demonstrated that. Therefore, I felt that I was in the right place in leading those conversations.
I'm going to follow up on that. Mary, how easy is it to lose trust of team members? And let's talk about some of the ways we can, as leaders, can lose the trust of our team. So Valley is going through a lot of change and transformation, right, Sabine?
Yes, that is correct.
So are we in the media business with our media production company. So are we with Lessons in Leadership. Easy to lose trust, right, Mary?
It is. It's very easy to lose trust, especially if you're not openly communicating with your team and with those in your orbit. We talk about the hub and spoke, Sabine, of you in the center, and then all of the little spokes of the wheel are those
The
people in
spokes
your
and wheel key
orbit.
relationships, right?
Yeah. And it's about making sure that those people that are in your orbit, that you are constantly being open as you can, and as transparent as you can in the process.
So stay on that, Sabine. How honest and candid we're trying to build trust, but there are certain things, especially when it has to do with, let's be candid, economics, finances, budgets, reductions, sometimes changing, that's being more efficient. How honest can we really be? We're trying to keep trust, but we can't just put everything out there. Go ahead, Sabine. I know that's a loaded question.
No, it's a really good question. I can think back to the work that we are doing here at Valley. You and I have spoken about the change that is happening. We have spoken about the transformation office that exists here at Valley, which I think is a perfect example. How do we build trust? How openly can we communicate in times of change? As long as you're as transparent as you can be, and the communication is timely. I think those are really important things, right? As transparent as you can be, and the communication is timely, and providing clear directions to our associates as we progress in our change journey has helped us a great deal. Not only in keeping them engaged and aligned, but the continuous building of trust happens when we execute on that clear communication, on that transparent communication to the degree that we can.
Yeah. Wow. Sabine, there's a can of worms that I'm going to avoid opening because we put it this way, in the world of public media right now in the state of New Jersey, we've been involved for years. There's a transformation going on in New Jersey in public media, and I won't get on my soapbox. There's a lot of uncertainty. Our production company is involved in an operation where we don't, and our team wants to know, where are we, Steve? What are we doing? Where are we going to be? How about being so transparent, Mary, that I sometimes have to say, don't know, but I'm asking you to trust that Mary and I will. I'm on my soapbox. I'll get off my soapbox. Go ahead, Mary. You go in a different direction because there's so much about trust that Sabine understands and facilitates conversations about. My mind's often about, frankly, what did I share? Why didn't I share that? Can I say I don't know? And do they, when I say that, do they trust me less? Because I'm just being honest. Go ahead.
So true, Steve. So
I don't even
true.
know where that
And
went, by the way.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. And one thing that did trigger with me, and it's something we've talked about with Sabine a lot, is often we'll say, well, someone over there is going to fix something. Well, there's a problem. Why don't you let them know? Well, who is the they? Who is the them? It's us. We are the leaders that we need to see. So talk about that a little bit, Sabine, of what that looks like at Valley, meaning if there's an issue, if there's something that comes up, or instead of coming to Sabine and saying, Sabine, I really wish that we would do X, come with a solution because we truly are the leaders that we need them to be. So I just wanted to, to get your philosophy on that a little bit.
I love the question. I think we are the they, right? That's
Say that again. We
it.
are the they.
We are the,
Mary,
we
that's
all
on my
are.
next book. We are the they.
We
Go on.
are the they.
Pick it up,
We
Sabine.
are the they. I mean, it includes all of us, right? I speak for all of our associates here at Valley. I speak about all on behalf of all of the leaders. We are all the they. In my mind, it's not an obscure thing. Who is that, right? It's all of us. It's all of us aligned to Valley's core values. And that's how I see it.
Let me just go back to something, and I'm going to put a pin in this. Some of you may be wondering why Steve talking about public media, and I'll make it clear. It's not about the transformation going on in media. It's not about my role in that. It's this. When we tell our team members there's a lot of change going on, I'm asking you to trust, Sabine, that I, as the leader of the team, together with Mary, but I'm ultimately responsible, that I'm going to do everything possible to get the best information, to make the best decisions on behalf of our team, getting feedback. But I don't have all the answers now. So here's the question, Sabine. Is it okay for a leader to say, I don't know and can't predict, but I'm asking you to trust that I'm going to do what is best for the team? Is that enough?
I think as long as you've built that trust and you have not hampered that relationship, and you continue as in Speed of Trust, the book, we talk about trust deposits. If you continue to build on those trust deposits, to continue to grow that relationship, it is okay to say, I can't share any additional information. I have shared with complete transparency what I absolutely can today, but you can trust that I will share additional information as soon as I can. Look, I think our teams expect us
That's right.
to be as transparent as I can, as we can. And we have an obligation to them to be as transparent as we can. However, there is a fine line at some point.
To put to exclamation point, I believe what Sabine is saying is these the trust deposits, you call them. I like that because it's Valley Bank, right? Trust deposit.
Yes.
If you're not consistently putting deposits into the trust bank, you can't snap your fingers and expect it to be there all of a sudden. Is that fair, Sabine?
It is absolutely fair. It is absolutely fair. And then you get into something that's more complicated. What if you broke that trust? What happens?
Yeah.
You have to think about that. How do you repair that relationship or that interaction? You weigh the pros and cons, right? Is it worth rebuilding? Is it worth redepositing
Wow.
in the trust
Oh,
bank?
this is
Right.
getting deep, Sabine. We told Sabine it'd be an 8-minute segment on trust and leadership. We turn it into a 15-minute segment. Trust that we are going to go all in with a conversation and not cut it off or edit it for any other reason other than this is really interesting and important. Hey, Sabine, you are a great partner, a great friend to all of our partners at Valley. We trust that we'll continue to work together, give each other honest feedback, and get better in the process. Our goal is progress, not what, Mary?
Not perfection.
Don't know where that is. Sabine, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Trust that we'll be right back after this.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragmatis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Great drive fuels the leaders of tomorrow and today. Great vision paves the way for a brighter future. Great ambition goes places, moving onward and upward. Great empathy finds strength in kindness and in each other, working together to create something bigger than they ever imagined. Great minds can change the world, and great minds start at Seton Hall.
Let's talk a little manufacturing in New Jersey and the nation. We're joined by our good friend Scott M. Shaw, President and CEO, Lincoln Educational Services Corp. Jack Nugent, the third New York workforce lead, U.S. Naval Maritime Industrial Base Program Office, and also Marty McGill, who is Vice President, Allendale Machinery Systems. Gentlemen, great to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Nice to be
here. Hey, Scott, our partner in the field of manufacturing and talking about a whole range of challenges in your field. Connect the three of you. How are you partners and collaborators, please, Scott?
Sure. So we're an education institute trying to bring people into the career field. And so we always like to work with industry. And in manufacturing, we've partnered with Haas. And Marty McGill is a vendor of Haas, and he's a really strong advocate for manufacturing in the whole region. He's a huge education proponent, and he goes around promoting the trades because he knows that his clients are in desperate need. And one of those clients is the Navy. The Navy needs to build three new submarines a year, starting, I believe, in 27, and they've identified that there's a huge shortage. So Marty introduced us to the Navy and John, and so we're all trying to work together to bring great jobs to the region to really benefit our whole country.
Great stuff. And as this program goes forward, we'll put up the Lincoln Tech website, find out more about them. They're our partners in this field. Marty, let me ask you something. Describe Allendale Machinery Systems. We'll put up your website as well. Please, Marty.
Allendale Machinery, we're a third generation family company. We've been in business for over 40 years. Our goal is to provide manufacturers custom solutions, robotics and automation to keep them more productive and efficient.
Jack, on your end, again, we'll put up the website for your team as well. Describe succinctly what you folks do, particularly in light of what Scott just shared, and why it's so important to our nation.
So the U.S. Navy Maritime Industrial Base Program Office is a U.S. Navy office that's really responsible for helping the U.S. Navy with the largest fleet, both surface ship and submarine recapitalization that we've seen since the Second World War. All the while, we're facing huge challenges in manufacturing from a supply chain perspective, from a technology perspective, from a workforce perspective. And so I'm on the workforce team, and our mission is to create pathways and partnerships nationally to bring about 250,000 new skilled workers. So welders, machinists, electricians, all the way to folks who hold four-year degrees that can go into kind of the design and engineering fields. Into the workforce, right? So into these companies that build parts for ships and submarines, all the way from some of the major shipyards that we have in Connecticut and Virginia, all the way down to, you know, small mom and pop shops throughout the country. And there's over 7,000 companies in the state of New Jersey alone that build parts for ships and submarines. So it's a massive charge. And like Scott said, the Navy's building three new submarines each year, the Columbia class, the replacement for the Ohio class, which is the nuclear armed submarine will hit the fleet in 2027, and the production of surface ships is right behind it. So it's certainly a national security importance.
Incredibly important. And Scott, I want to follow up on what Marty just shared. There's a new governor. We're taping this program right before Thanksgiving. It'll be aired closer to when Governor Sherrill becomes governor. If you're advising the governor as to what she and her team need to do to create a better, more productive, healthier environment in the state of New Jersey, vis-a-vis policies and laws and et cetera, focus or lack of focus, what does the new governor need to do to help this kind of operation succeed, which is not just for the state, the region, but it was just shared by Jack, for the nation? Please, Scott.
Sure. Well, I think that Asia has to be very open, and we need as many hands involved as possible. So we can't close doors on any channel of opportunity. There's lots of different ways for people to learn the skills, whether it's a proprietary school like us or traditional school or the community colleges, the high school vo-techs. They all have to be united in this front because the need is so great. There's plenty for everyone. So it's a question, I think, of being very open and looking to see who's providing these trades today. And I'd say whoever is providing these trades today, double down on them because they already know what to do. We can't really waste too much time because lots of times things in government, great ideas, they throw money at it, but you know, then it evaporates. And we really have to take action now.
We don't have that luxury. Let me follow up with you, if I could, Marty. AI, artificial intelligence, and the manufacturing challenges / opportunities you and your colleagues face. Impact of AI in your world. Go ahead, Marty.
I think artificial intelligence is really great, especially for monitoring machines. So now to make things, you need computerized equipment. To control the computerized equipment, you have to have a monitor system in place that if the machine is doing this and maybe it's cutting a little bit too hard, we go back to the machine, tell it back off, maybe make a tool spin faster. So the feedback is really important. Most of the equipment that we put out in the field has some sort of artificial intelligence with it now, especially automation, where we're replacing people doing RIT jobs like loading and unloading parts. We're putting robots there. Now, if that robot misplaces a part, putting it in the machine, we need to know that. So there are all kinds of monitor systems to tell them, oh, you didn't do that there, so you need to do this to correct it or let somebody know.
I'm so fascinated, by the way, Marty laid this out, because, Jack, I'm following up with you. You talked about in your opening comments how incredibly sensitive and important that your work is, you and your colleagues, to national security. Where do you see the role of AI and the safeguards that human beings have to provide? Because ultimately, AI, I'm a student of leadership. All of you know this book, Extreme Ownership, from two Navy SEALs who talked about extreme ownership. Who owns it? AI doesn't own it. Human beings, leaders own it. Please talk about that, Jack.
Yeah, and I will also plug that book. I'm a big Jocko Willink fan, and that's a great read.
For those of you,
yeah, that's a great read for those of you who hadn't read it. But like I said earlier, the Maritime Industrial Base Program Office, we have three major lines of effort to try to get us back to what we call the 1+2 mission, right? One Columbia class and two Virginia class submarines each year. And one of those lines of effort is technology development, advanced manufacturing. And, you know, I think the Navy recognizes that, you know, while we're putting an unprecedented amount of resources into workforce development and getting those 250,000, you know, new skilled workers into the workforce, a lot of this still has to be supplemented by manufacturing methods that, you know, that don't require people, right, that are using AI to both, you know, allow a company that maybe only has the amount of bodies for a double shift to be able to triple shift and have an overnight shift, but then also, you know, have it using machine learning to, yeah, to be able to create and fabricate parts overnight, you know, when the manufacturing floor is completely empty. And so, you know, we're working with private research institutions, we're working with 4-year degree programs, we're working with national labs to try to get AI into as many manufacturing floors that build ships and submarines for the Navy as possible.
Well said. And let me follow up with you, Scott. In light of what your colleagues have just said, to what degree you as a leader in your field and Lincoln Tech and your team, to what degree are you focused on and balancing the need to utilize and use AI to be more effective, more profitable, et cetera, but at the same time, protect people's careers, jobs without replacing it with AI? And that's a loaded question. We're trying to figure it out in media as well, but please pick that up, Scott.
Well, I think that, I mean, we're very much focused on it. We're looking at AI for our own business and what kind of repetitive tasks we can remove and become more productive. But as far as what we do as an organization, we're training people to be hands-on workers. And AI is not going to take that away. AI takes away your brain. It doesn't take away your hands. And so things that we're teaching people are, how do you fix things? How do you make things? How do you make things better with your hands? And what AI is going to do is going to just accelerate their ability to help more people. So for example, we teach people to be auto mechanics. AI will probably help diagnose what the problem is, but you're still then going to need a human to actually make the difference. And while there is lots of concern, I think, about AI in general, it's the people that kind of bring it all together. You know, Marty has machines that do a lot of work. They have robots that do work, but they need the people to kind of make it all work. And I had a good analogy. A board member of mine used to go to the initial Tesla factory, and the initial Tesla factory had just robots everywhere, and it looked so great. The problem is the world changes quickly, and they soon learned that once all of a sudden something changed, now they had to go find different robots, versus when you have people, you can quickly move people around, retrain them, and fill in the gaps much more quickly. So the point being, AI is going to come. AI will probably take away some jobs. Some new jobs are going to be created, but it will advance us and make us be more productive, I believe, overall.
So finally, I've got a few seconds left. Scott, AI is a challenge and an opportunity at the same time?
Absolutely. Yes, I believe so.
And the greatest leaders see it as an opportunity, but we have to have at least honest conversations about what it does, what it doesn't do, what its limitations are. Got a few seconds left. Jack, you're so proud of the work that you and your colleagues do for our nation because?
Because, I mean, if you look at the president's defense budget year over year, the number one funded project is the development of the Columbia-class submarine. It's the only clandestine part of America's nuclear triad. And without, you know, the maritime industrial base trying to get our mission done, that submarine is going to be delayed.
Marty, 20 seconds. You're so proud because?
Well, as manufacturing is a tremendous career. It's well compensated, and it keeps the American economy strong. Each manufacturing job, they say, creates 7 other jobs. So a state that has a strong manufacturing base is going to be a strong, financial, and attractive state to live.
Scott, you get the final word. Proud of the work that Lincoln Tech and your colleagues are doing is?
There's no problem. We get to change people's lives, give them opportunity. There are great jobs out there that can be had. You can start off at a lower level. You can always go back to college if you want to, once you know what you want to do. But there is great opportunity in this state, and I'm really optimistic for the future.
To Scott and our partners at Lincoln Tech, thank you. Also, great to meet you, Jack. Thank you for the work you do every day, and Marty as well at Allendale Machinery Systems. Gentlemen, great conversation. We appreciate it.
Great.
Thanks. Thank you.
I'm Steve Adubato for my colleague, Mary Gamba, on Lessons in Leadership. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragrametis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Great drive fuels the leaders of tomorrow and today. Great vision paves the way for a brighter future.
Great ambition goes places, moving onward and upward. Great empathy finds strength in kindness and in each other, working together to create something bigger than they ever imagined. Great minds can change the world, and great minds start at Seton Hall.